Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mittelstädt, that curling ball wasn't a bad one, and there's the leveler, Florian Wirtz. Germany have done it.
Just raucous crowds for that equalizer. We've been seeing Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on a Friday on WGR. We've been watching this Euro matchup, quarterfinal between Spain and Germany. The host is Germany. They were down to Spain 1-0 for much of the second half. A score in the 89th minute to tie it up. We're now in extra time. And the host being Germany, they have these watch parties all over the country. And I think they went to the one in Stuttgart, which is where they're playing. Just, it's just...
hundreds of thousands of people.
It does feel like that it's just so many people.
Because you know it's not just one watch party. That's a big city.
But I mean, it's thousands of people in like that one little group there, but it's everyone's clumped up together. Everyone's got the jerseys on. It's just, it really is, it looks like an experience to be had. It really, really does.
And Germany's been pouring it on here even as the extra time started.
Yeah. But funny enough, like these have been maybe, like I've watched a lot of the Euros. I've been really enjoying this. These two teams have probably been the best of the tournament. I would say whoever wins this game is going to be the betting favorite to win the entire tournament. It's been a blast. And then, yeah, to see this game go in extra time, great. I will tell you, though, Josh, now that we're in extra time, I really do. I prefer the Copa America route.
I just prefer golden goal.
I don't really care for golden
goal. No, why? Why? The NHL does it. It's fun. It's exciting. When your team scores in overtime, you're like, woo!
It's
this big let of emotion. Like,
it's fun. It's exciting. My problem is, and this is really only a soccer issue, with VAR. They're going to score, and then we're going to spend 5 minutes of them checking.
Well, they check everything.
They do, and that's my problem. It's like, no, I'm good. I don't need that.
Yeah.
I would much rather this go right to penalties like the Copa America does. That is fun for me.
I do think that the extra time periods are too long.
They are far too long. I mean, it's going to be another half hour of soccer.
Right, but if you shorten...
Even if, let's say, Germany, who's been pouring it on, goal in like the first minute, we still got to play a half hour.
But that's why I think golden goal would be so much better because
I thought
then it's
you would
like,
play 15 minutes. Like you
two
play
two 15-minute halves.
Okay, I thought it was like after 15 minutes, if it's still tied, you go into the next 15
minutes. No, it's just two 15-minute halves full
on. Never mind.
Mm-hmm. It's awful. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it.
Yeah, no, that's why I think it's if Germany scored right now, game over.
You want it done. I don't think it would work. Don't get me wrong. I would be very frustrated constantly because we'd go to VAR and they've got to check and, oh, this guy's shirt was offside by an inch, no goal. It makes me lose my mind.
But that's where you could have soccer like kind of not loosen those rules but make it different. Like if your body is offside to the point where you have an advantage over the defender,
of course.
That is offside. If my hand is past the defender, I'm perfectly timing my run. I'm not offside.
And that's how they play it. That's my biggest problem is that's how they play it is your arm was offside, which means you were offside. And it's frustrating.
It's like, no, I'm not using my arm to play the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I'm timing my run. I mean, I remember doing practice drills in soccer. I mean, as a goalie watching them come at me, we literally would practice that, like perfectly timing a run. You'd get a ball and you'd have to be running at the right point or else you wouldn't get to it.
Yeah. So where I did want to take this segment, though, because it's been very football heavy, a lot of Bills stuff as well. Love to keep going on that. 803-0550 is the number to call. I did want to touch on the Sabres, though, mainly because free agency was Monday. Sabres made a few smaller moves that really did help the bottom six, but since then have been very quiet. Development camp wrapped up yesterday morning with the 3v3 tournament, which is always a blast to go to. Josh, have you ever been to development camp for the Sabres?
Yeah, yep. I didn't get a chance to go this year. I went last year, though.
Yeah, that's right, because we went different days.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
But I have a blast there. Love that. Was not able to go this year, but every year that you can make it, try to. It's a blast. But the problem is, and where I'm at, is we're at Friday, and it kind of feels like, just from tweets from people like Pierre Lebrun, and stuff like that, where it kind of feels like everything is wrapping up, that we'll see you in camp in September. It doesn't feel like the Sabres are going to make that big trade that many felt they needed to this offseason for a top six forward. And with that point, where, Josh, is your confidence level with the Sabres lineup? With the feeling that, at least as I put it, this is a make-or-break season for Kevin Adams. Has he done enough on this roster, do you believe, for this drought to potentially be ended? Your face is kind of telling me a lot, to be honest. You're thinking, but it's not confident.
It's not an immediate no,
but
it's a no.
Yep.
Like, it's one of those things, because it's like, there's so we talked about it so much, that there's so many what-ifs. And what-ifs are fine if it's, you know, a rookie player is coming in, or a couple new players are coming in, or what if one guy has a bounce-back year, everyone else was fine except for him. This is a what if six players all bounce back next year? Mm-hmm. That being Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins, Alex Tuch, JJ Paterka, Jack Quinn, and insert name here.
Yeah.
Because they don't have, they got rid of Jeff Skinner. They don't have another guy. And that's where it's that, like, you feel like you're still missing a piece.
Yep.
Because my brain blanked out there when it's like, okay, who's the sixth of the top six? Is it Jason Zucker? Is it Zach Benson? Like, you don't have a third or a sixth guy there because you bought out Jeff Skinner. And
which at the time, I will say this, I was somebody that wanted that to happen. I am still. But it was always with the caveat of, you're going to make a big trade, though.
Right.
For maybe somebody younger to fill out his spot on the top six.
If you would have told me, hey, they're going to buy out Jeff Skinner but not sign anyone that is a bona fide top six player, I would have told you a million times no. Do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're going to try to work Jason Zucker into this top six, or you're going to hope that Zach Benson can elevate his game even more than he did last year and contribute at a higher level. I want to be optimistic, because I do feel like not all five of those players I listed off are going to be, you know, bouncing back and having career years again and whatever. But I do think that, you know, a few of them will. Tage Thompson, for sure.
I think him more than anyone.
He was injured a lot last year. So Tage Thompson for sure is going to be the one I look at and say, okay, if he doesn't come back, then there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But Thompson, Quinn on a fully healthy year, and Paterka taking a step forward, because Paterka didn't really fall off last year. He just didn't take – he took a big step, but not big enough to make more of an impact.
Yeah.
He's going to take a bigger step this year. And so I'm looking at Thompson and Paterka and Quinn as my three of, like, I really think they're going to step forward and come back to where they were.
Paterka, by the way, last year, 50 points, 28 goals.
And if you ask three guys to do that, it's still a big ask, but it's really not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because two of them will be on the same line.
Yeah, yeah,
but
I agree.
When you're asking five guys to basically turn their season or turn their playing style and everything completely around again and come back and do this, that's a lot of moving parts that has to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, Alex Tuch and Dylan Cousins can also have seasons like this where they come back. I just don't believe it as much because of how out of it they were last year without injuries. I mean, Cousins had that concussion thing early in the season, but by the end of the year, it's like, okay.
And they ultimately, they were never in it last year.
Right.
Again, we've joked about this team. They couldn't win two games in a row for the longest time. And then even when they broke that, winning three games became the hardest task in the world.
Yeah.
They could never string success together, even when it seemed like, hey, one game, they figured it out. There we go. Like, they're scoring at will. They're playing well. Mm-hmm. A lot of those Detroit Red Wings games recently in the last 2 years, they've done very well against them.
Mm-hmm.
This team still can't win at home. That was a big problem last year. Winning in front of your fans is a huge problem. And then for really all of their moves outside of, what, two to be one-year deals, and one of your two-year deals being Josh Dunn, who I believe is going to be more of a Rochester player.
Right.
And the other two-year deal being Sam Lafferty. It does feel very... Oh.
I'm okay.
Like the wind is just taken out of your sails.
I would have been okay with a one-year deal on like a big name, because that's where it's like, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to prove it to you. Prove it deal, a team prove it deal. Like, hey, we're going to prove to you that we can be good and you want to stay here, right? Right?
Yep.
And they just didn't do that. I get it. You have to look at what was available. There wasn't a lot outside of the big names like Stamkos and Marchessault.
And you were not going to be in on those. You just right. you simply put weren't going to be.
But there's I think there's a lot of questions when you get to a Toivo Teravainen or a Tyler Toffoli, I think, went to San Jose.
Toffoli, yep.
Yeah. Tyler Toffoli went to San Jose.
Yeah.
Like, how much better of a situation is San Jose than Buffalo?
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at standings, it's a lot worse.
It's a lot, yeah.
So, and again, you have to also consider players' play style and like, well, is this what they want out of a player? And that's, you know, part of the equation too. But it's just, it's hard because there's so many options out there that you can't, I can't sit here and say, oh, well, none of those guys are what they want right now. That's not the direction they're going. Probably like 30% of them were, and that's like 15 guys. There's 15 players out there that I think could have made a better impact on this team than the players they signed, and just nothing.
Yeah. I put up just on Twitter real quick with the league seemingly calming down. Again, very much could change. Don't get me wrong. Have the Sabres done enough this offseason for you to feel confident going into next season? Josh, I have one yes. I have a single yes from Chuck. And even he puts it at yes, period. Like kind of knowing that, yeah, maybe. Chris tweets in confident enough to miss the playoffs. Yes. I do have a little bit of hope with the new fourth line and Lindy making them accountable. I agree on that. Again, love the bottom six. I love the moves they've done to do that.
No, it's perfect.
And the Lindy hire, well, and I've gone on record a number of times of saying it, I get very nervous with how quickly they did it. But ultimately, I do think he is a better, far better coach than Granato and really a better coach than any of them they've had in this drought era, which is concerning because, you know, Lindy was the start of the drought era and then here we are, full circle. Love it. Time's a flat circle. But... I
postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do look at this team, and it just we talked with Paul earlier this week, and me and you have said it a lot. It does feel like this team, just to get back to relevancy, is going to have to break expectations. They're going to have to go in with the roster they have and go and make the playoffs with the roster they have. Now, ultimately, if Tage Thompson does return to a 90-point form, there you go. That's your top-end center. That's a really good pop. If UPL plays like he did last year, you have a number one goalie who, in the second half of the season, was playing like a Vezina-type candidate. If you have Dylan Cousins kind of get back to what he was 2 years ago with the kid line, especially if they're all healthy, great. Tuck from 2 years ago, great. Dahlin, really, for much of his career, playing like that, great. You have Bowen Byram, who looks very good. If their power play, honestly, if their power play is just even league average, you might have something there. But until they do make the playoffs, I think this is going to be a constant issue they are running into, which is you're not in the big name free agents. You're flat out not, even if you have a need. Even if some writers are out there going, yeah, the Sabres could be involved, or the Sabres are involved. They're not. They're not really. You know, it took having a coach with, you know, in which Taylor Hall really liked him and wanted to reset his career for him to even come here. It was not anything that the Sabres project. And that is where my frustrations with last year continue to arise. And I don't like going back to last year, but it feels like I have to because ultimately They did nothing when the league really thought they were becoming something. They didn't go out and make big trades or big free agent signings to kind of, again, kind of reload the roster or get them back to where they were. Instead, it was kind of the same comments we're hearing this year, but I think for a very different reason, which is we expect everyone to take a big step forward, or we expect these guys to get back to what they were. I think last year it was a genuine feeling that these guys are just going to take the next step. They're going to keep playing this way. You know, Levi's going to be here at goalie, you know, maybe UPL, what have you. This year it feels like, oh, they have to, because if they don't, a lot of us are out of jobs and we're starting over. And you're hitting a point in a sport where half the teams make the playoffs every year. It can't be that way. It cannot be that way. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to Perry in Lockport. Perry, good afternoon, my man. How are we doing today?
Not bad, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm on my way to work. But I just got a couple crazy theories, and then sitting here after I called in on hold, I was thinking, could it be as simple as Granato was like, you know how like your dad's your coach, but then you make it to high school, and now you have a high school coach, and his way of doing things is different, and you're not the kind of player you were? It seemed like Granato was somebody that brought them up, but then they kind of like outgrew him and really didn't buy into his system anymore because they were older and more mature. It seemed like when the fans kind of turned on Granato and Dahlin stuck up for him, it seemed like, hey, we're not really playing with a full heart this system. We've outgrown it. I mean, the Sabres did it once when Housley left, didn't it? At the end of the year, they scored like 12 goals in a game or something. And it's like, this is what we could do if you let us just play. So, I don't know. It's just sort of a crazy theory, but we've gone through, you know, Darcy collected picks like crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Murray, who was like, well, I don't care what you did with those picks. I'm trading the picks and the players for who I want that fits the team. Then that didn't work. We lost LaFontaine as the team president in the balance. Then it's you know, coaching change after coaching change. And it seems like, do we blame the players? Like, okay, we didn't make the playoffs, so Skinner's gone no matter what. But send a message to the room. We're not paying that price. And he's not the player he was when he was playing with Eichel, so what's the difference? It just seems like a lot of mixed messages, and then a new regime comes in, and it starts all over again. Just
yeah.
Sort of like, I guess, an obviously unstable franchise. Goes to what you're saying about, you know, we're not into those situations with key free agents that could help the team. We're just not in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Perry, thanks for the call, man. I think on the Skinner stuff, a lot of it just came down to, I think they were willing to pay the price. I personally, and not really having any insider info on this, he doesn't fit Lindy's style. And he's getting up there in age. They don't want to block their prospects anymore. So it kind of felt like maybe the perfect time to cut bait, let him go try to win a cup here. He's been a loyal soldier, if you want to put it that way, with the Sabres. He's had very good years. His year with Eichel, where he scores 40 goals. 2 years ago, I thought he was phenomenal on that line with Tuck, Thompson, and himself. He had 82 yeah. points, more assists than goals for only, I think, the second time in his career.
Well, and I think that's the other thing, too, is like when you look at what Skinner brought to the team on a every other year basis, mm-hmm. this past year, was kind of expected.
Yeah.
So
his only biggest problem was that just at the end of the year, what was it, post – the,
he had like 12 games where he didn't have a point or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and then post the All-Star break, he had like 9 goals.
Yeah.
And he was a non-factor by the end of the year. I think that was really the big turning point where I think even most Sabres fans would tell you they were okay to buy out Skinner and move on. Look, you don't want to block a lot of the young prospects that are coming up. I look at a guy like a Matthew Savoy is another one. I've talked a lot about wanting to maybe see him get traded because he is one of the more attractive prospects that they have. Where at this point, they're not making trades with those prospects. I can't tell you necessarily why. I do think there's potential reasons, one of which being, I don't know if really any of these players that the Sabres would be willing to give up the prospects for are actually willing to come to Buffalo. I think there are a lot of no-trade clauses, which Paul, we talked to him earlier this week, kind of said it. Like, the league is different than it was in the early 2000s, where, you know, 10, 15 players maybe total had no-trade clauses. Now it's like everybody has a list.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, that's another bit of the what-if situation the Sabres are running into this year is, like, what if these guys come in, like Savoy and Kulik and Rosanne and Östlund, and what if they're good? What if they are performing I firmly believe that one of them will, at least one of them will.
At least one of them.
If all four of them don't work out at an NHL level, I will be shocked. It would be incredibly disappointing and just wild if that didn't happen. You'll feel slightly cursed. Yeah, right. But the problem the Sabres are running into is they've only had these guys in their farm systems, so they don't know what they can do at the NHL level, so they can't properly evaluate in terms of NHL production what these guys will be able to do for them at the next level. So how do you know who to keep?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think this year you're going to see a lot more of those guys get called up and get chances, but then by the time you figure out who's good and who's bad, you kind of let the cat out of the bag, and everyone's like, well, that guy's bad. I'm not going to trade for him.
Well,
right now you still have the mystique of like, hey, that guy... it's a pretty highly touted prospect. Matt Savoy, drafted 9th overall, looked really good in the WHL last year. We could give you guys something really good for that.
But again, the longer we go here, the more it's all of a sudden like, why is he not getting in the NHL? You're not a playoff team.
Yeah.
And I think that it's twofold of like, if they play and play poorly, the cat's out of the bag, like you said, like, all right, we know who's bad. But the longer you don't make the playoffs and the longer they're just not playing in the NHL, it also makes you look like, okay, why aren't you not bringing that guy up? What's wrong? Like, what's going on?
Especially, too, an extension of that, if you don't play him, then you trade him, and he's amazing.
I can deal with that. I can deal with that. Because if you trade a prospect for a NHL-ready player who's done stuff in the league, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
If they ultimately go off and explode, great. That means your scouting department's really good. And you're getting good players. I mean, we're kind of at that point where
they're exploding for another team, why not just have him on your team? It's a younger version of the player you just traded for.
Of course,
them.
Of course.
Like that's the method of this, or that's the madness behind the method is you can't. I feel like this team can't make a decision because they don't know which way to go. And I'm not saying I do either, because it's a weird situation to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You're in this spot where you have to basically make like a potentially franchise-changing decision by trading someone like a Matt Savoy or Yuri Kulik, and you have to be prepared to watch them go somewhere else and really succeed and potentially have your guy coming in a trade not work out.
But if we're at a point now that this organization, let's say it goes that way where they don't know what decision to make, and we're at a point where that front office is there, where just they're handcuffing themselves because they do not know what to do, that is deeply concerning. And that then does go to the theory that Adams is in over his head. I don't necessarily know. I don't actually think so. I think a lot of this is he is trying to do the best he can with what is given to him and has screwed up one offseason, that being last year. I think that has been Adams' biggest misstep, is not really adding players and not really making the moves you could when the iron was hot, when the league looked at you as an ascending product.
Yeah.
The decisions were to add Eric Johnson, Connor Clifton, and re-sign a lot of your former players.
To be fair, though, I brought this up earlier in the week. If look at what Adams has dealt with so far as his tenure as GM. His first season,
he's had to deal with a lot.
His first season, he comes in and has to completely rehire everyone, pretty much. That same season, he has to trade Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, and Rasmus Ristolainen, three cornerstones of your team for the past almost decade.
Yeah.
And then the next season, it's, well, we don't really have much expectations, but, oh, look, we're 1 point out of the playoffs. Well, now what? I don't really know what to do here. I didn't think I'd get this far.
Like, well, and that's concerning, though.
That would have been his first real offseason as GM where he doesn't have to worry about trading a superstar. That's the scenario where it's like, well, I guess I got to go out and try to acquire people for my team, but I've never really been in this situation before, so like, what do I do here?
That's concerning. That is very. If that was really his attitude, should have been fired.
Well, no, I'm not saying that was his attitude. I'm just saying like, it's conceivable to think that with what happened his first 2 years as a GM compared to last offseason, and even this one, it was two vastly different scenarios. The first 2 years, it was, well, we are gutting everything and starting from scratch, basically, with a new core, a new group of people, a new staff, like everything. And then last year, it was, okay, that was unexpected. All of those guys are definitely going to do that again because they're all young, they're all great, they're all in their prime.
They're all working together.
Yeah. The coach is good. He's got all this out of him when the last coach we had couldn't do anything with these guys. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of fair to say, like, part of the reason they might not have known what to do, and I'm not saying they didn't know what to do. I'm just saying that in the sense of they probably were in the scenario, in the thought process of, like, if we go out and sign a bunch of people and bring them in, is it going to disrupt what we just had? Because what we just had was great. We just need a better goaltending. And that, to me...
And then they didn't really do anything with that, though.
But that, to me, is... Like, the thought process last season, yes, they should have gone out and got maybe one or two bigger names.
Mm-hmm.
But it should have also been what they did of, hey, Thompson looks great. He just had a career year. He's going to do even better next year. He's going to match it this next year. Tuck was performing really well with him. Skinner mm-hmm, performed really mm-hmm. well with him. Keep them together. Don't bring someone in that's going to disrupt that. Second line. The kid line, Cousins, Quinn, Paterka, they looked awesome. Let's keep them together. They were doing really good. There was a lot of evidence there to kind of prove what they did with the top six where they didn't touch it. And I'm honestly, looking back on it, I'm okay doing what they did
the top six. Yeah, the top six was fine. It became more like...
The bottom six in the defense.
When the top six wasn't performing well, which they didn't for a lot of last year, they had no depth scoring.
Yeah.
Their depth scoring was, they brought back Kyle Oposo and Zemgus Girgensons again, and Tyson Jost again.
That's where last year, I'll give you like that was a mistake, but I don't think it was that major of a mistake because of the fact that I don't think anyone could have predicted that all six of your top scorers mm-hmm. were going to fall off the face of the earth. One of them got hurt in the offseason.
Yeah.
The other four completely disappeared. And the one guy that was performing is J.J. Paterka, but his quote-unquote career year was...
50 points.
50 points because he's still young.
Yeah, it was his second year in the league.
And that's an incredible year from him for his second year in the league. And I'm assuming and I'm hoping he'll do better the next year. But I don't think anyone could have predicted that, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's a lot to all go wrong.
Yep. Tom tweets in, unfortunately, I think it's a wait-and-see situation. They can obviously still make a move, but as is, they're relying on a coaching change, the rebuild bottom six, and a health progression improvement of multiple players, which is kind of what you're saying, that kind of where they're at. Like, yeah, on paper, it's not great. But if Thompson gets back to 90-plus points, if Dylan Cousins gets closer to the 65, 75-ish area that he was in 2 years ago, if Tuck returns to what he was, Quinn and Paterka continue to progress. And I've mentioned a lot of times, if Quinn was healthy last year, even to just play 70 games rather than, you know, the full 82, we're looking at two young guys exploding last year. There could be something here. But as of right now, they're a team that is just, it's difficult to wrap your arms around them. Because the last two off seasons, they really have not done anything. One, I think, is no fault of their own. I think they've tried this year and they can't really do much. Last year, I think, was more they trusted the process too much and did not go forward or press forward with the advantage they were given. Got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we're going to continue on the Sabres conversation. If you want to join, 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here until 3 o'clock, and you're listening to WGR.
Just as someone who grew up and saw it, like, it's such a great hockey town, and you can see it in, I think, two ways, just from the support the team gets when things are going really well, and then the other side of it is so many people that play here stay here after. Like, there's a massive alumni base here, so that just goes to show how amazing the city is and how great the people are, and, you know, it's a great place to raise a family. Like, there's so many good parts about playing here, and that's why you see a lot of guys that don't leave after. So it's definitely an amazing hockey town, and it would be super special to help turn that around, and that's what I'm hoping to do.
There is one of the Sabres free agent signings from this offseason. Dennis Gilbert, defenseman from the area as well, played in the 11-day power play, I think a few times, or at least the last few years.
I think so.
And I think he's absolutely right there. When the going is going, very few hockey cities are better than Buffalo. But it has been a long time since they've been going. And we have got, right now, the Euros on, Spain-Germany. In the break, Spain took the lead.
Germany cannot buy a goal.
And Josh is right. Germany cannot buy a goal. This is getting very frustrating. We've got 3 minutes left in the extra time period.
No. And Spain's about to score again.
Spain looks like they're going to score here, going to put this away.
Neuer's
potentially, Neuer. And they don't.
Let's
they
go.
Don't. But it's become a very, very – the Euros has been great in terms of drama, and this just adds to it. The two best teams in the tournament going into extra time. They don't get to penalties, but Spain scores it to make it 2-1.
Hey,
and now Germany –
They're not in penalties yet. They're not in penalties yet.
But Germany just cannot buy a goal. They've had a few here where they just – it looks like it's all them, and it just falls apart right at the end. Had one where the Spanish goalkeeper had to make an unbelievable save. It's been a great game. I've only been able to watch really the second half here, kind of sparingly, like, you know, get a quick glance here and there because we've been on air. But when I've been watching, it seems like they're constantly in front of the other goalkeepers and having good chances. It's surprising, at least from what I've seen, that it's only 2-1. Again, I could be talking out of you know what. In reality, it's been a very boring game. But from what we've seen, it looks to have been an exciting game. Let's go to the phones here. We've got Matt on the line. Matt, good afternoon, my friend. How are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing all right, man. How are you guys?
Doing very well.
All right. So, I listen to, you know, both, all the sports shows on 550 regularly. And, you know, just one of the things I want to do with both Buffalo teams is letting these young kids play. I mean, it seems like, you know, the Sabres are kind of taking a model from the Bills where they draft these young guys and then they sign a veteran carbon copy that doesn't allow them to get on the ice.
I can kind of agree with that, man. Thanks for the call. I can really agree with that. And I think the Bills, though, Matt, to your point, are going in the opposite direction. They had this winning formula with the older players that they had. I think that's why they kept going back to that well. It was working for them. You could argue a lot of it was poor decision-making by coaches in 13 seconds, bad injuries, acts of God nearly. I mean, they could argue against it and to keep the ball rolling with the group they had for a long time. I think they eventually just got to this offseason where they decided, no, we've got younger talent that we want to start pushing forward, I think led by guys like Terrell Bernard, that they decided, no, this is what we're doing. The Sabres, it's tough, and I think it's tougher with hockey. They don't have any of those young guys that are like, you know, the Connor Bedards, the Connor McDavids, the Jack Eichels necessarily that just they're drafted, you go in. I mean, ultimately it worked for Zach Benson, but they've had to allow some of these guys to mature and develop. I mean, looking at Rochester these last 2 years, I don't really think anyone's thinking Yuri Kulik's going to come up this year and all of a sudden explode onto the NHL scene. He's having a really tough time in the AHL playoffs. I do, though, want to see them go to the young core because you saw when it's working, Jack Quinn, J.J. Paterka, Dylan Cousins, a kid line was one of the best lines in hockey. And I do want to see them go there. I'm a little more leery in the NHL than in the NFL. And really for the NFL, too, different league, of course, but also the Bills have the quarterback. They have Josh Allen there that can kind of cover up some of the warts that maybe are developing and you got to get through before they're full-fledged NFL talents. The NHL, I don't necessarily think they have that. Thompson has his moments, but I don't know if he's a 97-point guy every year. I mean, we saw it last year. He was not. I do think he's probably about a 40-goal guy when he's healthy. I do agree with that. I don't know about a 97-point guy 2 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't know.
40 goals, 57 assists.
I don't know if he's necessarily that guy, though. And that's my one fear is I don't know if he's that. But I like the young core they have. That's my continued issue with the Sabres. I like the young core they have. I like how well they're drafting. But outside of that, it has been very, very difficult. Little bit of an update, though, on the Euros. Spain is now down to 10 men. Danny Carvajal has been sent off. Did not see it. I saw a reaction from Josh, and I looked up. He's been sent off. I don't think they've got much time left.
No,
I think it's maybe about a minute and a half.
It's going to be this kick, and then I bet you the game's going to be done.
But yeah, so it's not really going to matter even going to penalties.
Hey,
it does not matter.
No,
but
stop it.
This has been a really interesting last 15, 20 minutes for this game.
I think the game's pretty much done.
And I think the final whistle, final whistle is blown. Spain wins. Although for them, I believe Danny Carvajal is not going to be able to play next game because of a red card. So that is going to be something they're just going to have to deal with now. But to do it on the last kick of the game to get a red card, that's tough. But the host, Germany, they are out. Spain wins that game 2-1 coming up at 3 o'clock. So in just about 20 minutes or so, a little bit over, we're going to have Portugal and France. France, easily one of the best teams in the world. Portugal, a lot of great young talent. And then Cristiano Ronaldo still playing for that team really, really well. Yeah, the Euros has been great, man. I have loved this tournament with all my heart. It has been awesome.
That's the last game for Toni Kroos, though. If you're a soccer fan, you know who he is. He's a Real Madrid legend. He has played for a long time a long time mm-hmm. in professional soccer. So, wow. All right.
Funny enough, Copa America, Euros, both hosts already out.
Well, to be fair, one of them made it in a lot
in record,
less dramatic.
In record-breaking fashion.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of them made it out. One of them got eliminated in a lot less record-breaking fashion than the other one.
And one of them is like a noted powerhouse in soccer. Yeah. No disrespect to U.S. I mean,
no, Germany's Germany. Germany.
I mean, they've won a World Cup in the past.
2014, they won.
2014. Yeah, it was 14. Yeah. So
to be fair,
I know
like
that's
no one.
I know that's
that
10 years ago, but
yeah, but there's like and there's like no one from that team anymore. But still, they crank out generational talent.
Germany's been phenomenal. Spain is. I would say now officially back to like their
they're back
early
the
world
back.
Yeah the early 2010s era where they were I think won a World Cup and a Euro in mm-hmm. consecutive fashion. They are unbelievable. It's been a great tournament again. Portugal and
France. Is Euros every 4 years?
Every two years. And so it's a nice little breakup between the World Cup years, and then Copa America is the same thing, and Africa Cup of Nations, same thing as well. A lot of fun. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we'll wrap up our show and get you ready for 3 o'clock, where Mike Shope is going to carry you until 7 o'clock tonight. You're listening to WGR.
Important challenge it was. Now Cucurella. Dani Olmo was in there, and oh! What has happened? Marino for Spain. Have we just witnessed the winning moment?
Mikel Merino there with the game-winning goal for Spain as they take down Germany 2-1. I will never not love soccer announcers. Every one of them just paints a picture with their words. It's phenomenal.
My favorite one is that one goal from the 2010 World Cup. The first goal, all of Africa is dancing.
Oh, yes, because it was the South African World Cup. They scored the whole thing. That's right. Because I remember they were one of the, quote-unquote, worst like teams to like host a World Cup. But Qatar kind of topped that by being the only team to host a World Cup to not have any points. And South Africa, I believe, actually won that game.
They did.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This was – who was that said that? I know it. I should know it.
Nah, I have no idea. Not a clue.
I think his last name is Drury.
Okay.
Peter Drury?
Not a clue.
I think.
You're talking to somebody that will be like, I love what they say. I have no idea what they are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I don't know any of these English
announcers. I've seen so many different videos of this guy talking about it, and every time the story is just...
I've never seen any of these, or I've never cared to learn any of these English announcers. It's not my thing. It is what it is. Back to Twitter, though. So I put it out there about an hour ago with the league seemingly calming down. Have the Sabres done enough this offseason for you to feel confident going into next season? Steve tweets in, I believe that the new fourth line is worth at least 5 more wins next season. They give the younger and top 6 guys comfort knowing someone has their back. We just need to hope that there is growth with the young guys because trades are difficult to make in the NHL for losing teams. I think Steve nails that. I'm a little leery on saying that the bottom or the new fourth line gives them like 5 more wins. That seems a bit aggressive. But there were points last year where, like after the top 6, it was just a chasm. There was no one else after those guys. And I do think, like we've talked about a lot this week, Josh, that ultimately losing teams or teams that have a losing mentality or just have not been good for years have a very difficult time at luring free agents and or making trades. Columbus did for years. We're kind of at that point where Detroit's kind of getting out of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their own troubles for years. Ottawa certainly has had their troubles. They're aggressively trying to get out of it, but every move seems to just backfire. So we'll see if Allmark actually is worth anything for them or not, because every move they make seemingly ends up being bad. It's going to be interesting. But we've heard that point that Steve brought up a lot, that these guys in the bottom 6, maybe even just the fourth line, will give confidence to the younger guys in the top 6 to do what they need to do. We've heard that quite a bit this week.
Yeah, because if you're not constantly worried about like, oh my God, the puck's going to my into my own end, like what am I going to do?
Yep.
It takes a lot of worry off of what I think was the problem this past season of mm-hmm. everyone needs to play defense better. No, you just need to have your defensive players play defense better. I don't care if Tage Thompson's line lets in 2 or 3 goals. They're going to make it up.
Yeah. They're on the top line. They're getting the minutes they are is because they're a constant scoring threat.
Right. Now, I shouldn't say that. I don't want them to let up 2 or 3 goals.
No,
a game.
But I know what your point is.
My point is that's not their concern. Their concern is to score. When you are a scorer, you are focused on scoring. You should not have to worry as much about defense. There's a line to that, but the Sabres went overboard on the opposite direction last year of, no, everyone has to play defense at an elite level.
And we're going
to
slow the game down.
We're going to slow it down, and we're going to score 2 or 3 goals a game, and we're going to win that way. No, the first year you run John Granato, you scored 7 goals a game and didn't care how many you let in. And you almost made it to the playoffs.
The Columbus game, I remember.
9 goals.
I think, Thompson scored 5 of them.
In the first period.
Just a phenomenal performance. And, looking back at that 2022-23 team, there was I still get excited talking about that team. It's the same guys.
Mm-hmm.
But, there was belief there that I'm like, oh, they're going to be, one of the, future teams that just run the league. They've got stars everywhere. You're getting Tage Thompson compared to Mario Lemieux. Because, honestly, who else are you going to compare him to? That's what it was.
At the time.
A big, tall forward that has skill. Mario, got it. Cool. That was it. That's all you had.
Great. An NHL Hall of Famer and legend. Awesome. That's what I want on my team. And that's what I want to feel again.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a moment this year where I looked at Tage Thompson and went, wow, that is
he's got it.
What he was last year. That is better than what he was last year.
How many injuries did he have to deal with, though?
He hit 2 in 1 game.
Yeah, there was. That's right.
The foot thing and then the hand thing.
Yep, and it's just he never looked right. But now, of course, we've heard reports. Not reports, just outright players saying it, former players saying it, him saying it, Kyle Poso saying it. October, they didn't feel like the team had it. And that's concerning, but it is going to now, fans are going to be watching this team like hawks around training camp and everything like that. Do you have it? What
are
the
vibes?
Yeah.
If people don't feel good, speak up.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think more so that had to do with the coaching and the leadership part of the room.
Yeah.
Because you still have.
We took a call in the last segment, and the caller brought that up. And apologies, we never really dove into that. I do think that was the thing with Granato. I think Granato absolutely became what all the fears were, which is he's a developmental coach. He's not the NHL coach.
Right. Once he gets them to that level of hey, you've developed them to the next level. Okay, well, now what?
Yeah.
I'm not used to being with them this long because once I get them to this level, they move on to the next level.
And that was the fears when he first kind of got the job full-time, but is he just a developmental coach? And the year prior made you think, nope, he's got it. Goaltending aside, they've got it. Yeah. They just need to get better there. This year kind of proved, no. And then, of course, when you get around to, no one's holding anyone accountable and such, it became very toxic very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And I think also it's going to be a lot because I don't think it was ever fully on the leaders they had. Because Kyle Poso, for what it's worth, was a pretty decent captain in his time here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at the end it got a little rocky, but there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
But, and at the very end, this past season, I don't think he was the right choice for captaincy. I don't think he should have came back this past season, to be honest with you. But he did. And I think it started with the fact that maybe Granato wasn't fully into it.
Mm-hmm.
That led to Ocposo being like, well, hey, if you're not into it, why am
I'm
I?
Not into
and
it.
Why am I getting into it? And I'm not saying that's right or wrong from Ocposo, but that could be one of the problems we're looking at here that we won't hopefully see this year from a guy like Rasmus Dahlin, Alex Tuck, Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins even, whoever the captain might be.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins is a very long shot, but at a time... A couple years ago, he looked like he could be the captain. He was always stepping up for people, ready to fight at any moment's notice, and he had that offensive flair.
Yep.
Last year, he looked like he was playing scared.
It was, we heard a call from it earlier this week too of that fight where he ultimately, I think, has a concussion or at least a face injury.
Yeah.
And after that, he did not really play the same. So, maybe the bottom six will really play dividends into how this team performs. That's going to do it, though, for me and Josh. Coming up next, Mike Shope. Bulldog still on vacation. He'll be back on Monday. Got lined up Sal Capaccio, Paul Hamilton, Ian Harditz as well. Should be a fun show. But for tonight, a note on the ballpark stuff going on at Sandlin Field. Savannah Bananas, they begin their 3-game road trip here in Buffalo tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. Tonight's game is going to start at 7 o'clock, and if you do not have tickets, good news, tonight's game and Sunday's game's going to be on ESPN, so do check that out. I'm excited. I'm going Sunday, and if anyone else is going, it looks to be a great weekend as well. So with that being said, have a wonderful weekend. Hope you had a great 4th. This is WGR. We're going to have Portugal and France. France, easily one of the best teams in the world. Portugal, a lot of great young talent, and then Cristiano Ronaldo still playing for that team really, really well. Yeah, the Euros has been great, man. I have loved this tournament with all my heart. It has been awesome.
That's the last game for Toni Kroos, though. If you're a soccer fan, you know who he is. He's a Real Madrid legend. He has played for a long time mm-hmm. in professional soccer. So, wow. All right.
Funny enough, Copa America, Euros, both hosts already out.
Well, to be fair, one of them made it in a lot
record-breaking fashion.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of them made it out. One of them got eliminated in a lot less record-breaking fashion than the other one.
And one of them is like a noted powerhouse in soccer. Yeah. No disrespect to U.S. I mean,
no, Germany's Germany. Germany.
I mean, they've won a World Cup in the past.
2014 they won?
2014. Yeah, it was 14, yeah. So.
To be fair, I know that's
10 years ago, but.
Yeah, but there's no one from that team anymore, but still, they crank out generational talent.
Germany's been phenomenal. Spain is, I would say now officially back to like their.
They're back.
Early world. Back. Yeah, the early 2010s era where they were, I think, won a World Cup and a Euro in mm-hmm. consecutive fashion. They are unbelievable. Been a great tournament. Again, Portugal and
France. Is the Euros every 4 years?
Every two years. And so it's a nice little breakup between the World Cup years. And then Copa America is the same thing. And Africa Cup of Nations, same thing as well. A lot of fun. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we'll wrap up our show and get you ready for 3 o'clock, where Mike Shope is going to carry you until 7 o'clock tonight. You're listening to WGR.
Important challenge it was. Now Cucurella. Dani Olmo was in there. And oh, look what has happened. Marino for Spain. Have we just witnessed the winning moment?
Mikel Marino there with the game-winning goal for Spain as they take down Germany 2-1. I will never not love soccer announcers. Every one of them just paints a picture with their words. It's phenomenal.
My favorite one is that one goal from the 2010 World Cup. The first goal, all of Africa is dancing.
Oh, yes, because it was the South African World Cup. They scored the whole thing. That's right. Because I remember they were one of the quote-unquote worst teams to host a World Cup. But Qatar kind of topped that by being the only team to host a World Cup to not have any points. And South Africa, I believe, actually won that game.
They did.
Yeah.
This was, who was that that said that? I know it. I should know it.
Nah, I have no idea. Not a clue.
I think his last name is Drury.
Okay.
Peter Drury?
Not a clue.
I think.
You're talking to somebody that will be like, I love what they say. I have no idea what they are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I don't know any of these
I've seen this guy. I've seen so many different videos of this guy talking about it, and every time the story is just.
I've never seen any of these, or I've never cared to learn any of these English announcers. It's not my thing. It is what it is. Back to Twitter, though. So I put it out there about an hour ago with the league seemingly calming down. Have the Sabres done enough this offseason for you to feel confident going into next season? Steve tweets in, I believe that the new fourth line is worth at least 5 more wins next season. They give the younger and top 6 guys comfort knowing someone has their back. We just need to hope that there is growth with the young guys because trades are difficult to make in the NHL for losing teams. I think Steve nails that. I'm a little leery on saying that the bottom or the new fourth line gives them 5 more wins. That seems a bit aggressive. But there were points last year where, after the top 6, it was just a chasm. There was no one else after those guys. And I do think, we've talked about a lot this week, Josh, that ultimately losing teams or teams that have a losing mentality or just have not been good for years have a very difficult time at luring free agents and or making trades. Columbus did for years. We're kind of at that point where Detroit's kind of getting onto that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their own troubles for years. Ottawa certainly has had their troubles. They're aggressively trying to get out of it, but every move seems to just backfire. So we'll see if Allmark actually is worth anything for them or not, because every move they make seemingly is... ends up being bad. It's going to be interesting. But we've heard that that point that Steve brought up a lot, that these guys in the bottom six, maybe even just the fourth line, will give confidence to the younger guys in the top six to do what they need to do. We've heard that quite a bit this week.
Yeah, because if you're not constantly worried about, like, oh my God, the puck's going to my own end, like, what am I going to do?
Yep.
It takes a lot of worry off of what I think was the problem this past season of everyone needs to play defense better. No, you just need to have your defensive players play defense better. I don't care if Tage Thompson's line lets in two or three goals. They're going to make it up.
Yeah.
They're going to...
They're on the top line. They're getting the minutes they are is because they're a constant scoring threat.
Right. Now, I shouldn't say that. I don't want them to let up two or three goals
a
game.
No, but I know what your point
is. My point is that's not their concern. Their concern is to score. When you are a scorer, you are focused on scoring.
Yeah.
You should not have to worry as much about defense. There's a line to that, but the Sabres went overboard on the opposite direction last year of, no, everyone has to play defense at an elite level.
And we're going
to
slow the game down.
We're going to slow it down, and we're going to score two or three goals a game, and we're going to win that way. No, the first year you run Don Granato, you scored seven goals a game and didn't care how many you let in. And you almost made it to the playoffs.
The Columbus game, I remember.
Nine goals.
Yeah, Thompson scored five of them.
In the first period.
Just a phenomenal performance. And, looking back at that 2022-23 team, there was I still get excited talking about that team. It's the same guys.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, there was belief there that I'm like, oh, they're going to be, like, one of the, like, future teams that just run the league. They've got stars everywhere. You're getting Tage Thompson compared to Mario Lemieux. Because, honestly, who else are you going to compare him to? Like, that's what it was.
At the time.
Like, he's a big, tall forward that has skill. Mario, got it. Like, cool. That was it. That's all you had.
Great. An NHL Hall of Famer and legend. Awesome. That's what I want on my team. And that's what I want to feel again.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a moment this year where I looked at Tage Thompson and went, wow, that is
he's got it.
What he was last year. That is better than what he was last year.
How many injuries did he have to deal with, though?
He had two in one game.
Yeah, there was. Well, yeah, that's right.
The foot thing and then the hand thing.
Yep, and it's just he never looked right. But now, of course, we've heard reports. Not reports, just outright players saying it, former players saying it, him saying it, Kyle Poso saying it. October, they didn't feel like the team had it. And that's concerning, but it is going to now, I mean, fans are going to be watching this team like hawks around training camp and everything like that. I'm like, Do you have it?
What are the vibes? Feel?
Yeah.
If people don't feel good, speak up.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think more so that had to do with the coaching and the leadership part of the room.
Yeah.
Because you still had...
We took a call in the last segment, and the caller brought that up. And apologies, we never really dove into that. I do think that was the thing with Granato. I think Granato absolutely became what all the fears were, which is he's a developmental coach. He's not the NHL coach.
Right. Like, once he gets them to that level of, like, hey, you've developed them to the next level. Okay, well, now what?
Yeah.
I'm not used to being with them this long, because once I get them to this level, they move on to the next level.
And that was the fears when he first kind of got the job full-time, but is he just a developmental coach? And the year prior made you think, nope, he's got it. You know, goaltending aside, they've got it. Yeah. They just need to get better there. This year kind of proved, no. And then, of course, when you get around to, you know, no one's holding anyone accountable and such, it became very toxic very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And I think also it's going to be a lot, because I don't think it was ever fully on the leaders they had. Because Kyle Okposo, for what it's worth, was a pretty decent captain in his time here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at the end it got a little rocky, but there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
But, and at the very end, like this past season, I don't think he was the right choice for captaincy. I don't think he should have came back this past season, to be honest with you. But he did. And I think it started with the fact that maybe Granato wasn't fully into it.
Mm-hmm.
That led to Okposo being like, well, hey, if you're not into it, why am I getting into it? And I'm not saying that's right or wrong from Okposo, but that could be one of the problems we're looking at here that we won't hopefully see this year from a guy like Rasmus Dahlin, Alex Tuch, Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins even, whoever the captain might be.
Mm-hmm.
Cousins is a very long shot, but at a time... A couple years ago, he looked like he could be the captain. He was always stepping up for people, ready to fight at any moment's notice, and he had that offensive flair.
Yep.
Last year, he looked like he was playing scared.
It was, and we heard a call from it earlier this week too, of like that fight where he ultimately, I think, has a concussion or at least a face injury.
Yeah.
And after that, he did not really play the same. So yeah, I mean, maybe the bottom six will really play dividends into how this team performs. That's going to do it though for me and Josh. Coming up next, Mike Shope, Bulldog, still on vacation. He'll be back on Monday. Got lined up Sal Capaccio, Paul Hamilton, Ian Harditz as well. Should be a fun show. But for tonight, a note on the ballpark stuff going on at Sandlin Field. Savannah Bananas, they begin their three-game road trip here in Buffalo tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. Tonight's game is going to start at 7 o'clock. And if you do not have tickets, good news. Tonight's game and Sunday's game is going to be on ESPN, so do check that out. I'm excited. I'm going Sunday, and if anyone else is going, it looks to be a great weekend as well. So with that being said, have a wonderful weekend. Hope you had a great 4th. This is WGR.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.